Buonissimo. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So, been on the rains for 1 whole week, 7 days. That should be enough to get all of you guys enlightened, right? So, it's in the Satipatthana Sutta. We're doing the practice well, diligent, ardent, secluded, just be enlightened in 7 days. And you're not. How about the jhanas? At least the fourth jhanas. No? No fourth jhanas? So is it good? That's the topic of this talk. Why not? Right? You have perfect conditions. Noble silence. Good food. Good weather. Lots of encouragement to talk, to meditate. Why isn't the mind not quiet? Right? No worries. You left everybody behind. No internet. No responsibilities. A bit of cooking, a bit of cleaning, but nothing, really. Why does the mind go quiet? The good news is, it's not your fault. Okay, that's good news. But the other news is that there's something to be done. So first is to know that there are the five, you only heard it before, the five hindrances in the mind, the five obstacles to peace. And unless you're fully enlightened, it will be there, at least one of them. Maybe it feels like all of them are there, disturbing you, interacting. Yeah. So the five hindrances, some of you may know. Desire, it all stems from desire, but they're different facets, so different manifestation of desires, you know. First one is kamachanda, which is sensual desires. Second is vyapada, ill will, irritation. Third is blah, 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 something, but it's sloth and torpor, tinamita, sloth and torpor. Fourth is vichikicca is restlessness. And fifth is doubt. So there's a five hindrances that's in the mind at all times, unenlightened beings. Right. So the challenge for each and every one of us is to get to know what is our hindrance, what's our fail when there's a plot that's in the mind. Usually this one, this two, something that we go to. There's, you know, and sometimes it's greed, you know, wanting something that's not here, wanting your fail with food, your favorite blanket that you forgot to leave behind. Remembering your husband, your wife, your girlfriend that you want to be with, your favorite chair. Just remember different bits and pieces that want to make your life a bit more comfortable. Yeah, so that's just desires. That's called kamachanda. And it disturbs the mind because it takes you away from the present moment. As soon as something comes up that you, oh, it'd be nice to have it, you've just put your foot into the trap because even if something that you can get it, you don't have it at that moment. So then suffering is born right away. That's what the Buddha said. When there's desire, there's suffering follows very quickly. Because usually the object you desire is not there. And the good thing with kind of one of the ways to kind of apply the antidote central desire is, yeah, just kind of bring up a sense of happiness, a sense of joy, but just being here. Look at the things, the positive things. Look at the things that are the beauty that we have, or the support, or the conditions that's already right. And say what's wrong with the situation, with your health. And there are many manifestations of, you know, sensual desire, right? And craving. Could be, you know, food, could be, you know, hot, cold, could be more comfortable. Should be meditating in the office instead of the sala. It's too cold in the sala. Lots of little things. We should take longer showers. 4 minutes is a bit too short. There are lots of different things that comes up during the day, during the meditation. That kind of takes us away from the present moment. But this thing, well, it's good enough, whatever it is, and that brings you back to the present moment, back to what is here already. Yeah. So that's the number one. And the first two is the main one. That the central desire is really important, because obviously most of us live in the sense world. We live in the world of taste, touch, smell, seeing nice things, hearing nice things. So when we're sitting here and all that, sometimes it's not here, we start to remember it, crave for it, long for it. And then, but unfortunately, that takes us away from the present moment, takes away from the breath, takes away from the object meditation. And it creates a lot of yearning, wanting. So that's the thing, just kind of always reflect on a bit of gratitude, a bit of contentment. Happy just to be here. Happy in the body you have. Happy in the conditions that's already here. Yeah. It's not perfect. Pretty close, but it's not perfect. And it's certainly good enough. Certainly, definitely good enough to be happy with. And that's sensual desire, craving. The second is, so one of the things, you know, what is it? So one of the things to be here. One of some things. And then the second, which is sort of its opposite, is wanting the opposite. One of the things to disappear. It's ill will. You don't like somebody. Wish they weren't sitting so close to you. Wish you're not sharing the house with them or something. Because they annoy you for different reasons. They talk too much. Or they don't talk enough. They're not friendly enough. They practice no silence too well. I thought you try to talk to them, they walk away. It's pretty rude. So it's ill will that comes up sometimes. Ill will towards the weather, definitely. It's too cold in the morning. Ill will towards the routine. That doesn't come up, does it? 4 o'clock in the morning. In Thailand, they get up at 3. Okay, so I guess you guys are wondering. We haven't moved there, next brains. So different things, different little irritation that comes up from time to time in the mind. And that's just normal, it's ill will. But also the other thing was some bit of a sign angle is it depends on the personalities we have. And the personality in some of the commentary work is that there's three types of personalities in the world. And, you know, it's, I mean, rough generalization. But it falls in greed character and anger character or deluded character. So your greed character, you're constantly thinking of things that you could have, things that you want to make more comfortable. Your anger character, then you constantly think about that annoys you. This person is annoying, that, yeah. So just watch what's in the mind. And a lot of times, you know, and that's the main thing. The encouragement is to investigate and don't fall for the trap. That one is to blame the situation. This person is really annoying. That's nothing to do with me. They are just truly annoying. Some people are just so annoying that you can't help it. It's not true. So don't focus on the trigger, which is why that person's annoying you, or what they say that to annoy you, and how wrong they are, or whatever. That's the trap, so don't go there. But you focus on, oh, why is this, you know, why is these thoughts of irritation, ill will comes up in my mind all the time? That's interesting. And when I'm in a bad mood, or I'm not feeling well, I start to get these thoughts. Oh, okay, it's interesting. When I thought about, you know, when I have a bad interaction in the kitchen with a certain person, that starts to bring up other thoughts of negativity in my life. Ah, okay, that's interesting. Oh, it's just ill will. So the practice is just to kind of step back, identify with it, not to go into the narrative, the story, and to feed it by thinking over and over one, you know, what's wrong with the situation, what's wrong with your body, or whatever, not to feed the irritation, but to step back and first just to notice that it's just, yeah, it will come up. And to try to kind of encourage people. First, it's just to, ill will is some, look, some, not ill will type. Ill will is easy to see. This is so unpleasant. Like you feel it's the heat in the body. It's a tension, very unpleasant. And you, when you feel it, truly, in the body, you try to relax it. You feel unpleasant, it's in the mind even. It's easy to let go. But greed is slightly more different because it's always good to have, you know, good to have more convenient things, good to have this and that, the other stuff to make you more comfortable. Or it's good to get the good meditation. So we can long and yearn for endless things, more refined things. So greed, if you're a greed character, is hard to get rid of the mind because it can be more subtle greed. You know, to be a good person, to get good meditation, that's normal, that's a good, healthy greed. To be perfect in your sila, and department. Yeah, so there's other spiritual greed that we can have, spiritual qualities that we want to have, and that can be endless, but that's also greed. Yeah. But greed is more refined, so it's hard to get rid of subtle things. First, you may get rid of, you know, the coarse things of, you know, addictions to drugs and unhealthy stuff and alcohol, whatever. It's easy. But then we start to get to more attached to more refined food or certain things. The routine in our life we want to have. We want to have be warm or comfortable. We want to have different things. So that's kind of greed character. But anyway, so going back to the ill will, yeah, you know, anger and irritation does, even if you're not an angry type, visits people from time to time. You don't get your way, you get annoyed. You don't get enough sleep, it's grumpy, that's normal. Yes, but first is to admit, yeah, this is just anger. It's not your, and then, you know, not, and the first thing is to, you know, go into the trigger. Blame the external world, blame the other person, blame the situation, blame the schedule, blame the ajahn. That would never happen, right? So don't do that. What we need to do is to step back and to say that's just ill will. Yeah, and that's natural to a certain extent. That happens from time to time on an unenlightened mind. Ill will appears. But what you need to do is to try to find, first to get to know it, what it just feels like, why does it appear, what conditions bring in, sometimes just a grumpy mind, sometimes a certain situation arising, certain person triggers certain things that brings other things out. Sometimes that's just habitual thinking of the mind, they can't think about negativity, all the things, and it just, you know, it's just like a rut in the mind. The more you think about certain things, the more it just comes up. It's easier to do that. So understanding that, you're trying to work with it, trying to apply the antidote to ill will. And that is metta meditation. Metta, this feeling of friendliness, well-wishing, or just changing positivity. Yeah. Thinking, even though, you know, this person is the worst person in the whole world, that your worst enemy that you just interact with, they still want to be feel happy. They still want to be loved. And we still want to be respected and appreciated. All beings want safety. All beings want a sense of, you know, well-being. Want to be a sense of community. Yeah. Want to be understood. We want to be understood. Want a sense, you know, good health. So then, knowing that, we wish that on other people, on all beings, even people we may not like, but we still understand that there's a sense of well-being that they want. Yeah. So the metta could be, you know, switching the positive. You may have difficulty with this person, but not everybody in the monastery has difficulty with this person. So obviously, he's not such a bad guy. She's not such a bad girl. That's just normal. Yeah, so trying to do metta, looking at the positive side of things, balance that. Sometimes in that instant when you just had an argument, it's hard to think of positive thoughts about the situation, about this person. But then when the mind is more cooled down, the mind is calmed down, then you bring up thoughts of, okay, I was really angry this morning. Or I've been angry a lot. So maybe I should do a bit more metta meditation to direct that, to counterbalance the tendency that's already in the mind. Yeah. It's a bit metta meditation, a bit of acceptance. Maybe metta brings up kind of icky feeling, like kind of fake, happy copy kind of thing. So maybe not metta, but kind of acceptance. Yeah, this is where it is. Or appreciation. Yeah. But like I said, at least the feeling of friendliness. Feel the sense of well-being. You may not want to hang out with them, but you still want them to be well. You want them to be happy. Because that's what you want for yourself. Yeah. So bring a sense of feeling of friendliness, acceptance, love and appreciation. And we can go more into that later on. But yeah, start with an object that's easy to think of. Your parents, your loved one, your teacher, your kid, your pet, your plant, your teddy bear, whatever it is to bring up feeling of friendliness, cuddliness. And then you can spread that to different people. Spread that to the person you are having difficulty with. And you'll find that it has, you know, kind of quite effective, quite powerful actually. Direct the mind in this way. And with anything, with these kind of spiritual qualities that we're trying to work with, it's just like the muscles of the mind. It's something that we all have in each and every one of us. So a lot of time we just don't use it. But you know, the metta, the feeling of acceptance, feeling of gratitude, that's all muscles that we learn to use in different situations. And the more you practice, the more you direct your mind to it, the easier it gets. And the more skillful you get at doing it. Yeah. So the antidote to ill will, irritation, which of course appears from time to time in all of us. And certainly in the communal life when we are, you know, living in close proximity. We see each other every single day, 4 times a day. I mean, how many places do you do that with other people? You don't. So you see the same people and it's just normal. And you're in a bad mood, didn't get enough good sleep. You start picking fault with different things around you. Not the end of the world. But understanding that, you cultivate a sense of metta, appreciation, sense of acceptance to the situation, to the people around us. So that's the first two. That's the main kind of obstacle to peace, is wanting something or not wanting it. Want to be somewhere else. Yeah. That thing comes up in the mind. And it could be a subtle thing. It could be memories of the past. Things like nice things you've done, the nice holiday, or just a different situation where you can do whatever you want. You know, I'm letting you wake up at 4 o'clock and I gotta go to this meeting. And I gotta go eat at this time. I gotta eat at this kind of food and I don't like this cooking and whatever. Don't like my accommodation. I want something else. Wish I was somewhere else. I'm gonna do whatever I want. Wish I was somewhere to retreat already. Or whatever. So it's just the mind taking you away from the present moment. Something else. A different place. That's your will. Number three is sloth and torpor. Tinamita. And it's an absolutely normal thing to have in the mind from time to time. Yeah. And also one thing is not to give into it. Right? You're feeling sleepy, of course, you're like nodding, everybody's nodding. Some people nod more than others, but nodding is normal. But when you curl up and go to sleep, and that's not really working with it, is it? Finding a nice little hole to crawl into, that's not really working with it. So understanding that, you're like, okay, yeah, you find you bring as much awareness into it as you can. And I found over the years, actually, some of the people, the recommendation I always tell is like, kind of straighten your posture and put awareness in the posture. I think it helps to an extent. But over the years, I found that just actually allowing the body to nod and just being aware of it, allowing it just to rest. Over time, it allows the mind to rest. And because you are nodding for different reasons, you know, long day, work day, emotional, different things that come up, not enough sleep or didn't get proper sleep, rest or something. So the nodding, but then after a while, and you're just watching it, the mind starts to brighten up after a while. And you can sit and meditate and be with an object. But if I found that if you have low mental energy and you start to nod, and then you use that what little energy you have into like really exerting your will to force the body to stand up, to straight or something. You do that for a while, but then the mind just fades away again because you're just using energy, and what little energy you have into your posture. And then you're tying it down because you keep using what little energy you have left, forcing the mind into, forcing the body into a certain posture. And then when that energy is depleted, you go back to soften torpor. So you go up and you go down. And you go, you know. So I think, you know, with and also with these five hindrances, I forget to say, they are the standard advice that different teachers give you. Certainly work with it. But the main thing is, you know, and for each and every one of you, is to investigate it, to know it. Which one is your favorite? And what different things you can do to bring a balance to it. What's a good antidote that works for you? You all know what greed, hatred is, but how does that appear in the present moment? How does that appear in your mind? How does it manifest itself in 4 o'clock in the morning? Greed, anger, sloth and torpor. Yeah. To understand that way that works. And then to work with it. Yeah. So with sloth and torpor, yeah, you're kind of watching it. But maybe, yeah, working on the posture, awareness, watch if that works as well. Try that out, see if it works or not. Doing some walking meditation, standing up. Sitting outside, it's not a bad thing. Sitting outside is very kind of invigorating in the morning. Yes, 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 there's people, there's lots of talk. You should keep your body warm because you have a cold. Not true. I think you can play with it. It's not going to kill you to have a, you know, be a bit cooler than normal. And what are they? Just kind of invest and do whatever, you know, it takes. And not be afraid to push the boundary of what you think is available, what you think you're capable of. Those ideas, you know, because like I say over and over again, so much of our limitation is self-imposed. So much limitation we can't do what the body could do. It's something that we heard somewhere and we decide, oh yeah, this is what it is. I really need my 8 hours. Like, any less than that, I start to go funny. I get angry. And if you say you think you get angry, of course you get angry, because that's what happens. It's kind of self-fulfilling prophecy. But you say, oh yeah, see what happens. Work with it, you know, the body and the mind situation. Just being aware. Maybe it is true. Maybe you do need 8 hours. But you don't know that unless you try a bit less and try different circumstances. So with Tinnamita, as always, yeah, experiment. Change your posture. Stand up. Look at the candle. You massage your earlobe. That's what the Buddha said. He gives, I think, 9 or 10 antidote for Tinnamita, for sloth and torpor. Massage your limb. Different ways of kind of just kind of brighten up the mind. Thinking of the different teaching, the Dhamma that you've heard. Anything that's going to activate the mind. Sometimes it's just kind of the mind is bored, so it turns itself off as well. But I remember as a lay person, just I think it's normal. One is that I had a very active life, running around all the time, right? You know, doing different things, appointments, and working and stuff. And when I started to meditate in the monastery, the only time, pretty much the only time I'm sitting still, is, you know, no, I never sat still. The only time I'm lying down, I'm lying down still, it's sleep time. The only time I'm still is like when I'm sleeping. So every time I'm sitting, yeah, I would fall asleep because that's, you know, the mind just didn't know the difference. That you know, yeah, you know, I'm sitting still, closing my eyes, and it must be sleep time. So I just, yeah, it took a long, long time to kind of work with the sloth and torpor. But also, sloth and torpor, it's not a bad thing. It's actually one of the better hindrances because it means you're very, very peaceful. But you've gone too far. You let go too quickly of the breath. You let go too quickly of your meditation object. Mind is peaceful, but it doesn't have that brightness in inside. It hasn't that awareness. It's peaceful, letting go of the external world, the body. You know, usually, you know, it's achy body, so you can't, you know, really nod off. You have an achy body, and you attach this feeling in the body, so you can't let go. But you let go of the body, and there's feelings there. And it turns itself off, but it turns itself off quickly because there's not awareness. It's like when you, and you, with sloth and torpor, it's like, bring as much awareness to go as you head towards, you know, certain things. It's like going on the road. There's a fork. The fork, one of it is sloth and torpor. That's a dead end. That's a very dark alley that you just got into and you don't see anything and you're gone. But then the other street, it goes up the mountain. And it's bright and it's clear. It's beautiful. It's full of energy. And that's where the samadhi is. That's the other one. But if you go down this way, you go, and you get, as you get towards the fork, try to pay attention, you know, when am I turning up? You know, when I'm watching my breath, when does the mind just go up? That's when you just kind of just put a bit more awareness, a bit of energy into watching your breath or watching the mind. Where is the mind going? It's peaceful, but where's it going? It's letting go of the body, letting go of the external thing, but it's something goes quickly into the dead end. And at times, it's something you do a lot, then the mind just goes there automatically. So you have to kind of just bring as much awareness when you're sitting. And you just, you know, you've been sleeping a lot last few sittings. Like, okay, you know, where is it going? Where is it playing with? Sometimes it's just, yeah, because the mind's tired and you're staying up later, whatever. But other times it's just, you know, or it could be negativity. It's the cause for sloth and torpor is also a slight negativity that, like, yeah, you know, I'm doing so much meditation, I'm so over this, that I want to do something else. Yes, and then it turns itself up because it doesn't want to be here. So that's part of sloth and torpor's issue. But sometimes you had your rest, you're in a good mood, and the mind still turns up, and it's something else. Yeah? So anything, just investigate, trying to really get to know these things. How they manifest in your own personal experience in the present moment. And then to apply different things to make it work. The great thing about meditation is it always keeps you on your toes. You never quite get it like, okay, I've got my, I know what to do now. I sleep this much, I do this and that, and then my meditation will be well. I had a great meditation, I know what to do now. Usually it doesn't work that way. You had a great meditation, you try to replicate it with different conditions, mind still goes all over the place. So meditation is always kind of present moment, you know, what is, you know, and where is the mind? Yeah, this kind of ability just to be open, to wait for the breath to come to you, wait for the body to calm down, to allow things to come to you instead of kind of drive the whole process. Yeah, this ability just to wait, to be alert, be aware, and to be curious, wait in wonderment. See what happens. What am I today? What's the mind doing? What's the breath is doing? Is it coarse? Is it refined? How's the body? Is the body tense? Is it relaxed? Lots of energy. So when you sit, just kind of ability just to watch, to investigate what's happening. Instead of having a fixed idea that what you want to get out of it. How long you watch the breath for? What things you're going to do, go to, once you get the breath and you go to the nimitta and you go this, that, because you read all the books about how to get into deep meditation states or whatever. It's more organic, just sitting, waiting, watching. It's the best way to get to peaceful meditation. So that's sloth and torpor. The other one is restlessness. Restlessness is, yeah, kind of obvious. You get your nap already, lots of physical energy. But unfortunately, lots of physical energy is that it's hard to sit still. Yeah, the mind just moves all over the place. Yeah. But, and then maybe it's, sometimes it also depends on what you've done, the, you know, before coming to the monastery or coming to the sit, where there's a lot of talking, a lot of reading, or just the mind is fixated on some things, a lot of problem solving, you know, to solve some problem. There's something that's a project you're working on. Things coming up, and that will just stimulate the mind to see, you know, to go to into that aspect of it. Yeah. So that's restlessness, and sometimes it has to do with restlessness and remorse go together. Rest and remorse. Remorse has to do with it when you're breaking the precept. You've done something. You said something. Somebody that's a bit sarcastic, mean or whatever. You're not keeping your 5 precept or your 8 precept. It's not as clear as you could. You know, clean in the bathroom properly or something, feeling guilty. Your different bits and pieces that comes up. So restlessness and remorse, it's also another conditions of the mind that appears from time to time. And what's the antidote for that? Antidote for that is the same with most of them. Just a bit of acceptance, a bit of metta, a bit of recognizing that it isn't your personal failing, that your mind is restless, but it's just restlessness. Right? Sometimes we go into, I'm a bad meditator because I've got all these problems. No, the problem is always there. And that's what you get when you get born. That's what you get when you have a human body. And when you're not enlightened, you get these five hindrances. Yeah. And they come for free. Compliments of samsara. And yes, it's nice to be happy. You want to be happy. You want to be peaceful. You want to have love and clarity. And that's where the work begins. There's something you want, wholesome qualities, which will come next week. What are the wholesome qualities you would like to have? That's coming next. But you like wholesome qualities, you have to develop it. You have to put some conscious effort, stirring the mind. And that's what the work is. It's not to get caught up in whatever negative situation that we have, but it's just kind of inclining towards positive qualities or recognizing the negative qualities of the mind, accepting that's at the moment, this is what I'm feeling, and then applying the antidote to these different situations in the mind. With restlessness, a bit of acceptance, a bit of recognizing this is just what's happening in the mind, a bit of contentment, and just sometimes just watching the mind. Okay, where do it wants to go today? A bit bouncing around, where does it go? Okay. It doesn't want to sit. Instead of kind of forcing the mind to sit and not move, you kind of get up and do some walking meditation and just, you know, work with the energy in the mind. The body feels like really, you know, restless. Just work with that. Instead of having a fixed idea what it is that you want to do. In the meditation. And the last is doubt, which is also normal. Sitting here, you know, doing this breath meditation for many years now, and you're not getting anywhere. You're not getting your nimitta that everybody talks about. You're not getting the piti sukha, the rapture that people talk about. Just all you get is a boring breath. Maybe I should do something else. Maybe I should do body contemplation or something. Well, maybe I should do the Mahasti method or something. Noting. Well, there's, you know, like a zillion different things that we can do. So the mind just doubts. And doubt goes in many different areas. Doubting your meditation object. And if you are kind of a certain type, you also doubt yourself, which is also common. That whether you have what it takes. Maybe you don't deserve good meditation. Because you're such a bad person, or you don't have enough baramis or whatever that we think about ourselves. Yeah, that's also not true. But we all have the capacity to have good meditation, really, to be enlightened. And this doubt is just doubt. Yeah, okay, today I'm not feeling very confident. That's okay, it's just doubt thinking. Yeah, doubting yourself, doubting your teacher. That's very bad karma. The Buddha, down the Buddha, down the Ajahn Chah. Ajahn Chah doesn't really know what he's talking about. He has a stupid cow simile all the time. That's so boring. Cows and chicken similes. I don't want any of that. I want somebody who can speak modern language. No, down the Ajahn Chah was good. He's fully enlightened. He can teach. We have great teachers in our traditions that teach from their experience, that teach things in a way that's easy to understand and connect to. So it's a wonderful blessing that we have all these tools with us already. Yeah. But also the only thing doubt the only antidote to doubt, unfortunately, is experience. That initially when we practice, there's always lots of doubts. You know, whether what we're doing here, there's all the bowing thing, the chanting, mumbling, hocus pocus that we do in monastery, whether that adds to anything or not. So doubts and question, that's normal. So that's kind of, so the antidote to doubt is some of it is just to ask questions. You know, what's happening? To do some reading of the Dhamma, read the sutta, what the Buddha said, what the different meditations said. So some knowledge is good to calm some of the doubting back. But it would never go away. Because that's part of, you know, kind of an enlightened mind. But also, doubt only go away when the practice starts to mature. When you start to see the result, when you reap the results yourself, then doubt fades away. Confidence arises. You know that, yeah, practice works. There's a sense of well-being that comes up. The mind's clear. You realize, ah, okay, yeah, see, it does work. You know, when I don't talk so much, watch my breath, I'm mindful of what I'm doing, things start to calm down by itself. Yeah. And then doubt starts to fade away naturally. Yeah. So anything, that the only final antidote to doubt is through the practice. Yeah, it's not something you can. And also doubt is a curse of a quick mind, intelligent mind. When you think, you think enough, you will think about what, you know, things are missing, things are, that you don't know everything, and things that are, you start to think about negative things of anything. So the doubting mind is when the person who thinks a lot usually will be plagued with doubt from time to time. Because, you know, with anything, you know, the answer, the real good answers to life doesn't come from thinking, it comes from experience. It's like, unless you taste, assume fruit, you don't even know what it tastes like. You read everything about it, read all different books, the variety of durian that there is in Thailand, what kind of durians that comes out, the different flowers, different pictures, you know how to grow the durian tree itself, different types, how much they cost, what the different one tastes like this and that. But unless you really taste yourself, read the description of what other people taste, they're like, you never know. That's why that's the only reason doubt can be overcome. It's through your own direct personal experience itself, of the different things that the Buddha talked about, different things that the Ajahn Chah talked about in his practice. And when you taste peace for yourself, tremendous confidence arises. You know how to get there, you know what it works, you know what it feels like. And you know, and then it gives you great confidence. You don't need to debate with other people about different ideas about practice. You can have your own compass. You know how to get there. What people say, if they agree, that's interesting. They don't agree, it's also interesting. Doesn't really matter. Yeah. You understand where peace lies, understand where clarity lies already, once the practice is deep enough. And there's no doubt in that way. Doubt starts to fade away. You realize that what the Buddha taught was true. You don't have to be fully enlightened, but the more you kind of start to taste the fruits, the more you start to reap the result, and you realize, go in the right direction, draws more clarity, draws more peace, a sense of calmness arises naturally from the practice. So those are the five hindrances, five friends that you should get to know, understand, to work with, and to apply different antidotes to transcend them. Yeah. Sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and remorse, and doubt. Not your fault, but something that you can investigate, something you can learn. And that's a lesson. Just take it as a challenge. Not just take it as a personal failing, but take it as a challenge. Okay, this is my challenge for the week. This is what I'm facing with. How did I learn about it, know about it? And then hopefully, and when that's the great thing about kind of the practice and the wisdom aspect of it. Once you understand these things, they fade away by themselves. You don't have to do anything. It's not like you have to conquer them, beat them up, annihilate them, wish them away. You understand nature, desire, fades away. You understand ill will, fades away. You understand remorse, sloth and torpor, get to know, truly know them, they fade away on their own. You don't have to do anything. Yes, understanding is, wisdom. Like I said, when there's wisdom, there's no problem. Problem ends. There's a problem, and there's a wisdom somewhere. Aspect lacking wisdom. Okay, so I offer that for your reflection today. Five hindrances.
Dhammayang dhammakatha sadhukarang galomase. Amen.